Top Spotting 179.
Friday, December 16th, 2011.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Feedback Friday, and while Joel steered clear of the musicals category yesterday, it sounds like the rest of you still had a lot to say on the subject of Broadway.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Julie from Chicago. I just wanted to call and say that I loved the podcast on favorite musicals. And unfortunately, I just downloaded them recently, so you had already aired your episode of people calling in and giving their opinions on their musicals. So I just listened to that, too. And I had to call in because I am a musical theater actress. That is a part-time job of mine. And I just really wanted to share with you guys some amazing musicals that were not mentioned. They are lesser known, but just amazing. One of my favorites is Avenue Q. And if you are a fan of The Muppets, which I know both of you are since the last episode was just talking about The Muppets, you need to check out this musical. Even if you just download the soundtrack, it is freaking hilarious. It's basically the adult version of Sesame Street. It is so freaking amazing. Some of the songs are The Internet is for Porn. There's one called Everyone's a Little Bit Racist. It's really, really funny and also touching. So love that musical. Someone mentioned earlier in your first podcast about the Book of Mormon. If you love South Park, you will love this musical. Download it. It's amazing. It's basically these two young Mormons who are selected to go to Uganda, and they think they're going to go there and change everybody's lives, and then they realize that it's just really a poverty and violence-stricken country, and they learn a lot about themselves. So it's not, it kind of, it makes fun of Mormons, but also at the same time informs the audience about what Mormonism is, and it's really like, got heart, and it's hilarious, and it's awesome. You just need to check that one out. Love the mentions of all the Sondheim musicals, Into the Woods, Sweeney Todd. I mean, Sondheim is like a god in musical theater for us musical theater people. Another one I'd recommend is Company, which is also an older piece. It was written in the 60s, but it's all about relationships. It's about these four different couples, and they're all friends with this single man named Bobby, and they're basically all trying to get him married. They're trying to find him his perfect mate. And so it's kind of about a lot of songs about being married and the trials and tribulations of being with another person for a long period of time, and also the tribulations of trying to find that perfect someone. And the music is really deep. The lyrics and the scenes are really deep and also really funny. So check out Company. Another musical that I love, my theater company just did it this year, it's called Passing Strange. It is a newer musical. It was done off-Broadway, I believe. And it's about a young black man who is, he's born and raised in L.A., but he's middle class. And so he's constantly struggling with the issue of being black but not being from the ghetto. He's actually from a family that, you know, isn't poor, and he decides to go to Europe to find himself. And the whole show is narrated by his older self reflecting back on his younger self, and then his younger self and other actors play out the scenes from his life. I just want to let you guys know it because you're musical fans, and I think you would really love these shows. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll be listening to Pop Spotting. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call, Julie.
I've always been really curious about Avenue Q. It's probably one of the few shows that I would go out and buy the soundtrack to without seeing the show first.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is adult Sesame Street. I've seen clips of it on YouTube, various segments in it. It looks really good and, of course, very subversive. And I realized there are songs from it that I've heard that I didn't know was from Avenue Q, like The Internet is for Porn and Everybody's a Little Bit Racist. Mm-hmm. So definitely something to check out there. And Passing Strange, I had to look that one up, but apparently if you want to see the musical, you can get the Spike Lee documentary of the musical, which includes the full performance of it.
Oh, great.
And, of course, the mention of Book of Mormon, the South Park one, I think that was actually what started this entire conversation in the first place. So I'm curious about that one as well. Let's hear another call from Andrea.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Andrea from translatingwebdesign.net. I wanted to chime in. I know I'm super late, but I wanted to get into the conversation that you guys were having about musical theater. I love music and I love musical theater. And I've been blessed and lucky enough to live in New York City and to also have seen a lot of Broadway plays, traveling plays, and, you know, when I've been into the city as well. Some of my favorites, I would have to say... definitely, I'm going to have to add another vote to Wicked. Wicked is phenomenal, especially having seen it on Broadway, the production value on it, is phenomenal. Like, just the staging, the theater itself is all decked out just specifically for the play. It's quite the experience. The music is phenomenal, and you can't go wrong anywhere that Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth are involved. Another favorite is also an Idina play, which is Rent. I think that used to be like a classic Broadway favorite, and it's been such a long time, but I'm so glad that it's back on Broadway now. And I'm looking forward to seeing it many, many more times. I've seen it more times than I can count. So those would probably be my two favorite. There are just way too many to mention, but I thought I'd chime in and give you two of my favorites. Thank you so much for the work that you guys do. Love the podcast, so keep it up. Thanks a lot.
Mahalo for your call, Andrea. And first of all, you're not late. There's no such thing as late feedback
no,
here on Top
Spotting. No, absolutely not.
You should know. I mean, the way we record, there's usually at least an entire week that goes by before we get to feedback to a topic that we've covered. So don't feel like you've missed some window to call in. And in fact, you know, Feedback Friday is often the show that's the closest to extinction. And when we're reaching sort of to fill it up, we'll actually have feedback that we've saved from as much as a month ago. So no matter what your concern, no matter how behind you might be, we absolutely want to hear your feedback. So what do you think, though, in terms of more love again for Wicked and again for Rent, which we've also previously discussed?
I really feel like I didn't give Rent a whole lot of credit, having only seen the film, but I know people's lives have been changed by the Broadway play, and I am a big fan of Jesse L. Martin, so Rent is something I would definitely consider seeing on Broadway.
Well, you know, Chris Columbus did that movie, and it turns out that, you know, I mentioned Spike Lee doing the Passing Strange documentary.
Yeah.
Spike Lee was actually the first director that was engaged to do the movie version of Rent. But what he was trying to do was use big singers and famous movie stars to be in that, and apparently there was some conflict over it. So when Chris Columbus did Rent, he made sure to use as many of the original Broadway cast as he could.
I don't know, a Spike Lee musical? I think I really could get behind that.
Well, then maybe we'll check out Passing Strange. Let's get to our next call.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Holly Cross calling from Royersford, Pennsylvania. And I was just listening to your musicals podcast and really loved the topic very much. It's right up my alley. And I wanted to let you know what my favorite musical is, Wicked. That is a terrific story, of course, based on the prequel of The Wizard of Oz, of course. And I just recently saw Billy Elliot, which is excellent. Music by Elton John. Boy, can these kids tap dance. Two shows that really, if they ever come around to Hawaii, you should check it out. I really enjoy listening to your podcast. I'm a longtime listener from the transmission. As a matter of fact, I'm listening to the rewatch with Jay and Jack, and I'm also re-listening to the transmission podcast, too. I'm rewatching season 6 of Lost. Anyway, enjoy the podcast very much, and you guys take care. Bye-bye.
It sounds like Wicked is the number one pick among our listeners.
Yeah, if there was a top five from all of the feedback we've gotten, that would probably be it. Had you heard about Billy Elliot?
I knew that there was a musical of it. I didn't know that Elton John was doing the music, which is very fascinating.
Well, that's something that we might have to look into as well. It turns out it's still on Broadway, which is the good news, but the bad news is that it's on Broadway through January 8th. She says, you know, check out these if they ever make it to Hawaii. That's always a challenge. I mean, Hawaii is very rarely in that first or second tier of cities for national tours for musicals.
No, I think in the past 10 years, you've gotten only a handful of shows.
Well, there was a big run of them for a little while. That's how we got Les Mis and Phantom and all
Saigon,
of those.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure, you know, the economy being what it is, and of course, it being so expensive to ship things out here, it's just more of a challenge. We're usually going to have to be content with DVD or YouTube bootlegs. One more call from Belgium.
Hey Ryan and Jen, this is Vinny from Belgium. I just wanted to give you some feedback on the musicals episode you guys did. I absolutely love musicals, and I've been lucky enough to see a couple of them on the West End. I saw Andrew Lloyd Webber's production of The Sound of Music and The Wizard of Oz, and I love them both. And I saw Les Miserables in the West End, and I saw it in Oslo as well. And I really liked seeing it in Norwegian because it meant that because I don't understand Norwegian, I focused more on the music and the acting and the staging. Bye.
Thanks for your call, Vinny.
It must have been strange to see Les Mis in Norwegian. I think it's always strange when you see a movie or a play in the language that it was not written in. Like, Martha called in last week about seeing the Muppets in Spanish.
Right, and so, although it does give you an opportunity to pay attention to things other than the lyrics, particularly for a musical, I think, then you're going to be more conscious of the staging or the movements of the actors and such. And, yeah, that was Andrew Lloyd Webber's presentation of The Wizard of Oz, and apparently still playing. He's got Michael Crawford in one of the lead roles, and of course, Michael Crawford was, I believe, the original or most famous Phantom in Phantom of the Opera, although reading the Wikipedia entry for Andrew Lloyd Webber on this musical and another one that he's recently done, they cast one of the main singers through a TV singing competition.
I didn't know that.
Almost like the same gimmick that they have in America, but I'm hoping that maybe the performers are of a slightly higher caliber, but that's something worth checking out. Let's change the subject, though, to movies, and we had some feedback on our earlier conversation about The Descendants.
Cheryl writes, I finally saw the long-anticipated The Descendants. I didn't love it, but I really liked it. I love the Hawaii-ness of the movie, which was done so well, and Shailene Woodley was outstanding. Judy Greer and Beau Bridges were also wonderful, and I love the music in this movie and will definitely seek out the CD. But the story is not as remarkable as Payne's previous three outings, and Clooney didn't bring the needed depth of feeling. I did not buy him in this role, but sometimes it was also the fault of the simplistic writing. I'm interested in reading the book because I felt a lot of nuances to this story were missing.
And you said the same thing in your review, having read the book, that you thought there was much more to it. I have to admit, I think we need to see this movie again. I was just so dazzled by it. I was so moved by it. But finally, one of my coworkers, Faith, who I respect a great deal and is very local. I mean, I'm actually kind of a non-local local, but she's very local. She didn't love it either. So I'm like, well, I might have to take another look at it and take a step back. But I'm glad that Cheryl did enjoy it. It's, you know, certainly not as biting as any of Alexander Payne's previous films, but that's because it wasn't his story. Vicky in Illinois emailed to say, this past week I went to see The Descendants starring George Clooney and I loved it. First off, I have to say that the depiction of Hawaii was absolutely beautiful. The panoramic views were just breathtaking, and one of my favorite shots was when they raised the camera over the hill to show the family land. As for Clooney, I agree with Jen that it was a little hard to buy him playing the everyman, but that is not to say he did not do an amazing job. I think it was a stretch for him to play someone who is not always in control or always knows what to say. The short scene of him running down the street in his slippers was probably one of the funniest parts of the movie, just from the sheer awkwardness of it. He definitely deserves an Oscar nomination, if not the win, for this movie. I agree with Ryan that this film really felt like real life. There are definitely times where you just have had bad thing on top of bad thing all happening at the same time, and you have to somehow deal with it. As for the soundtrack, I really liked how some ukulele music was used, but they didn't just limit it to that. As you mentioned, it can get a little stereotypical when that's all they use, and it was all the better because they didn't. I would definitely recommend this film, and it certainly is an Oscar contender.
She said slippers.
Yeah, not flip-flops. Very important there. And yeah, you know, Clooney being the everyman, everybody talks about that slipper scene, and I'm not sure, you know, it's interesting how it's being interpreted. Someone was like, that comedy just didn't work for me. It seemed out of place. It seemed, you know, I kind of liked it because it is messy, awkward, and uncomfortable, and that's just sort of how life is. But I think when people were seeing it, they were like, is Alexander Payne trying to do something funny here? And I don't know if that was really what he was going for.
No, I didn't think it was funny at all. I felt the panic that George Clooney must have felt when you know, he's running down the street and he's about to hear some really terrible news. And I felt more of a sense of panic and fear than comedy.
Yeah, well, I do agree that he did well. I think Shailene Woodley, I'd be more excited to see her get recognized than George Clooney.
Yeah, she definitely deserves it.
Let's move the topic over to television. And Sherry on Facebook wanted to help me understand what the big deal is about the letters on Sons of Anarchy.
Sherry writes, why the extreme reaction over the letters on Sons of Anarchy? They are written by John, and he gives evidence as to why he thinks Clay is out to kill him. He even says that after the first failed attempt that he thinks Clay will try a mechanical accident. Eventually, Clay gets the guy who works on John's bike to fix it, and later kills the mechanic to cover his tush. So it's not just about John wanting to stop the gun running, but that Clay eliminated him to continue the gun running and to be in charge. The letters also give evidence that Gemma and Wayne Unser were involved in the murder attempt and thus probably also involved in the successful murder. If you watch closely, Gemma reads the letters and withholds some of the letters from the file. Gemma didn't give all the letters to Jax. Tara even asks her later about the ones she took out. Interesting thoughts on Tara. I hope you're wrong, though, because I don't want her character to die. I was looking at it differently. I've wondered when Tara was going to get tired of all this craziness and just take the kids and run. When she damaged her hand, I thought it was a clever device to eliminate an out for her, to give her no other option but to stay and dig into the club and become the new head old lady.
So that was helpful. Thank you. A good recap, some history there. Like me, you weren't paying close enough attention. Maybe I'm spending too much time on Twitter when I should be paying attention. But also, there were some nuances and details that were added after we recorded to why those letters were important. I also think that now actions have been taken as a result of what's in those letters. You know, now that the characters are driving the action, hopefully the letters are just going to be kind of a red herring, apart from those missing letters. I do want to save our thoughts on this season finale, the end of this season of Sons of Anarchy, for a future TV Tuesday, perhaps next week. But very quickly, what about Tara? You know, first she was saying, I love you, mysteriously. I figured she was going to go out and drown herself with some posies, but that's not what happened. Do you like the turn that she took in terms of facing off with Gemma?
I think that what she's going to end up being is worse than death, in a way, because I think she really is now the head old lady, and I kind of would not wish that even on Gemma. I mean, in a way, that's kind of the worst position she can be in. She can no longer be a doctor. I mean, she's going to spend the rest of her life taking care of Jax.
Well, I do like that last scene in the sense, because it was sort of she just basically stared down Gemma and said, "All right, if I'm going to stay, then we're going to play." You know, if she's going to have to be part of this club, she's going to take a role in it for sure. We've got some really good TV feedback for next week's Feedback Friday. Jeff and Matt and Ian had some TV shows that they wanted us to look out for and to check out. But to close out this episode of Feedback Friday, as promised, we wanted to share another submission from one of our listeners. You know, Jeff Gentry has been doing great musical feedback, mm-hmm. and somebody has said that they wanted to do board game reviews. But the first person to volunteer to do video game reviews was our friend Al Ross. So here is his take on one of the hottest games out there right now this holiday season.
Hey guys, this is Al Ross calling in for a report on the Elder Scrolls set of games. It was the game Elder Scrolls 5, which is entitled Skyrim. This is the fifth of the Elder Scroll games, number four about, 2005, 2006. Called Oblivion. Was quite a revolutionary game. And before that, there was Morrowind and a set of other games. These games are role-playing games on the computer or on consoles across multiple platforms. So there's available for the Xbox, for the PS3, and for PCs. And what they're doing is they're using a first-person shooter technology in order to be able to do the role-playing. So a lot of your combat, a lot of your interactivity is kind of the over-the-shoulder camera shot that showing you with whatever actions you, using a controller, determined to take. And that includes combat as well, where you're using your controller to either strike or to make some special clicks and so forth to do a magic spell or to take a potion, things of that nature. One of the things that was interestingly new about how Oblivion handled the controller was it allowed you to not only control your character, but also a series of characters with those same clicks. Basically, if you were doing a fighting action with your guy and one of the other guys was like a healer, he may, by some pre-programmed set of things, either be attacking or doing healing onto the parties. And that was also programmable and controllable through a set of fairly simple pre-programmed processing, which you could set up with your character through a pretty simple GUI interface. So, that's one of the things that was discussed by people who've been playing across the Oblivion and Skyrim games 6 years apart, that a lot of the menuing systems, controlling systems had been simplified, that the graphics had been tremendously updated, such that mountain effects, fogs, rain, etc., were shown with great detail. And a number of reviewers that I've seen indicated that they would just simply stand, for example, on top of a mountain, looking at the sunset just for the gorgeous aspect of how Skyrim is showing the game. In regards to how the game plays, Oblivion would use a character set of quests to resolve or destroy a kingdom after a civil war, your character basically would help make those decisions through a series of quests. You would either, you know, purposely destroy the portions of a government or a village, or tear them down, or try to resolve the situations that are going on. So very political, very oriented around trying to either resolve or not resolve based on what your character would do. Skyrim kind of does that, so continues on that reign, but with an explorable world. In other words, you don't have to necessarily follow just the quests, but you can do what you want. Take part in the world that exists. Both games are superb and excellent. I recommend them both. The video game geek rank for Skyrim is 6 on both the PS3 and on the Xbox. So I would strongly suggest, if you have any interest in RPG games, both games are strong pickups, but the hot one right now, of course, is Skyrim. Hope you enjoy.
Mahalo, Al, for taking the time to give us an overview of Skyrim. It's like one of the big releases. The other one is Modern Warfare 3, so if you're into that, maybe you can send in a review. The neat thing about Skyrim is everybody I know that's into games is definitely in love with it. Mm-hmm. My coworker Bob plays it on the PC, so he can use that interface to pre-program actions and be really complex about it. My only complaint about games like this is that they're so beautiful you want to share them with other people, and right now it's not at the point where you can play together with somebody else and explore this mm-hmm. beautiful world. In any case, if you've got an opinion on Skyrim or Modern Warfare 3, if, like our friend Pete, you want to talk about board games, if there's a pop culture itch that we are failing to scratch, you can just pick up that mic and send in your own reviews. We love any kind of feedback here on Pop Spotting.
You can leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808. You can email us at feedback at popspotting.net, or you can comment on our blog at popspotting.net.
One of the best ways, though, is to post your thoughts on the Pop Spotting page at facebook.com/popspotting. That's where other listeners can see your comments and start a conversation long before it even turns up on the podcast.
And you can also connect with us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
As crazy as the holiday season is getting to be, we're going to do our best to be back next week with more pop talk. For now, though, we want to thank Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song.
And thank you all for listening to our show. For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Aloha.
Aloha.